The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at cooperadio.org.
Well, last year saw 1,716 people die from illicit drug overdoses. The toxic drug supply has been getting more and more poisoned. During COVID, the numbers have escalated. A new poll by the Angus Reid Institute finds that record levels of Canadians, and especially in BC, support the full decriminalization of all illicit drugs. We talked to Dave Korzynski. He's the research director with the Angus Reid Institute, which conducted the poll of over 5,000 Canadians. Dave, thank you so much for joining us here on The Pulse on CFRO.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
One of the topics we've long covered on this program is the opioid crisis and the drug poisoning tragedy that we've experienced and worsened in the last year. Could you talk a little bit about why Angus Reid decided you wanted to poll on this across the country?
Yeah, this is about the third or fourth time, I can't remember exactly, that we've done this since 2015, since we've been an organization. And our mandate is essentially to just investigate things that are within the public interest, or a nonprofit organization. So, you know, we find issues that we think are important to people.
And 2015 was like a year before they declared an official emergency in BC.
Yeah. And I think our actual first poll where we really dove into this that I can recall was 2017. And then we did it again in 2019. And then we've done it again now. To provide a little bit of a baseline in how the issue is affecting Canadians, and in this case, really trying to figure out how much people are even still paying attention to this amid COVID. That was one of the things that we were really interested in was, you know, this is always an issue where we've had people saying that this is a crisis for the country to deal with every time that we've asked over the last 4 years. But how does it kind of rank now that there's another public health crisis that is really drawing a lot of the air in the room? And that's kind of where we were coming from, is just that we've looked at this previously. It's an important issue, and it's one of those ones that we unfortunately keep going back to because there's, you know, we're seeing record levels of overdose deaths across the country. If you look at any of the data provincially, it's pretty bad. And it seemed like the right time to check in again.
Now, it's killed far more people in British Columbia, at least, than COVID itself. Unfortunately, it seems like Canadians are paying slightly less attention, according to your latest poll.
Yeah, and that's, you know, the breadth of the COVID crisis and just the fact that it has affected everyone has really drawn a lot of the attention, despite, as you mentioned, the disproportionate number of people that we've lost due to the opioid crisis. What we find is that when we asked this the first two times. So in 2017, it had been declared a public health emergency in BC. It was spreading, if you could say, to a lot of other parts of the country, because BC has been kind of the center of this issue in Canada for so long that a lot of people in this province have been very comfortable, you know, with their awareness of the issue and knowing what's going on and having high levels of awareness. But we hadn't seen that in the rest of Canada. But by 2017, you've got 33% of Canadians who are following it quite closely. That jumps to 42% in 2019, with another 36% who's saying that they might not be following it every day or weekly, but they are seeing some coverage and they're having conversations about it. So that's basically 80% of the population. What we see now when we just asked this question recently is that 42% has dropped down to 16%. So that's 1/6. So less than half of the number of Canadians are actually paying close attention to this issue as were 2 years ago.
You asked people if they knew somebody who died to an overdose from opioids, and it's pretty shockingly high. Over 1 in 10 British Columbians said they know someone who's died to an overdose. I don't know anyone who's died from COVID. I know two people whose parents did, but I definitely know multiple people who have died of an overdose.
Getting data about an issue like this, you hear so much of it anecdotally. You know, I join you myself, and unfortunately, having some experience with losing somebody to this issue. And it really is, once you get, you know, you talk to, say, you know, 1,000 people, and you find out that, you know, 1 in 10 know somebody who's died, that really brings it home, the staggering number of people who really have been affected by this. And when you look at the percentage of people who know somebody who might not have died from this, but has dealt with addiction, then it jumps up even more, and you get, you know, closer to one in five people who have some awareness of this and some personal exposure to it. But as you mentioned, 11% in BC say they know somebody who's lost their life. That's by far the highest in the country. It's basically double the next highest, which is Alberta and Saskatchewan, both at 6% now. So it's a really unfortunate distinction that we have, is that this has really affected BC residents more than anywhere else in the country.
It may not be the top of mind issue for a lot of Canadians, despite this huge impact, but you did find that people believe that it's a serious problem, and a significant number believe that it's actually a crisis, that it's something that is a very, very serious problem.
That's something that continues to be pretty much every time we talk about this. You do see a lot of people who say that this is a crisis in their communities. If you look at across the country, you know, Saskatchewan has really been a hotbed for this type of, you know, these types of issues over the course of the last year or so. And we noted that in our data this year, is that, you know, 50% of people in Vancouver say that this is a crisis in their community, but it's up to 49% in Regina and 58% in Saskatoon. And those are numbers that are way higher than we'd previously noted. So BC really were a lot more, I hesitate to use the word accustomed, just because, you know, it's such a serious issue, but we're so much more familiar with losing people and this sort of ongoing crisis that we've been looking to government to solve for, you know, decades now. But it really is reaching other communities. And one of the things that we asked over the course of the last year is that, thinking about your own community, is this something where you think that has your government made some sort of progress on this, or has it actually gotten worse? And half of Canadians say it's worse in their community now than it was in the last year. And if you look at what Canadians think about the country overall, that jumps to 71% who say that the issue has gotten worse, which, you know, the data really does back up, and only 3% of Canadians who think that we've made some progress on this. So really staggering numbers of people saying, yes, this is a crisis, and no, we are not getting anywhere.
We mentioned people who knew that there was someone who had died from opioids, from toxic drugs. But you didn't just ask about that. You also asked about people who'd been prescribed opiates, been dependent or addicted to opiates, or just overdosed and survived.
You really do see the breadth of the issue when you look at all of those different ways that I think that people can have opiate use be in and around their lives. So you've got 38% of people across the country who say that they have been prescribed opiates by a doctor over the course of the last 5 years. And you know, obviously there are issues wherein opiates are a very helpful form of medication. So we don't want to say that, you know, 38% of people have had a difficulty, but they've been prescribed them. Among the population, we've got about 12% who say that they've had a dependency or an addiction issue. And that one kind of, I think, catches people off guard. But, you know, I think most of us can think about a person in our life or somebody that we know who has had those sort of challenges. And that 12% really, you know, when you look at the Canadian population, you know, we're talking about 4 million people there that are dealing with this types of issues, or at least know somebody who has, if they haven't themselves.
It's a good reminder too, that, you know, addiction takes so many different forms. And when it comes to opiates, it includes, you know, injection or smoking drug users, but also recreational users and also prescription drug users who have become addicted.
One of the big connections there is that people who use opiates for chronic pain and who try to potentially, you know, wean off of those types of drugs and then go back to them and find themselves in this kind of addiction loop where they really need them without access to some other form of treatment that's going to fundamentally change their situation. A lot of people do rely on these types of drugs. And I think that's where you get, you know, it fewer people have experience with the types of really difficult, challenging situations that you see somewhere like the downtown east side, where you've got people who are using injectable drugs. But the opiate crisis more broadly that you've seen in North America over the course of the last 10, 15 years really is because of those prescription medications and the fact that you've got to be very careful, and it's very easy to become dependent on that, those types of things.
Obviously, this is a life or death tragedy. We've lost thousands of people, loved ones, friends, family members. What do you think the benefits are of tracking data like this, and what kind of data do you think might be most useful for people who really want to do something about this and not just get more numbers? Because I think a lot of us are just so inundated and horrified and heartbroken by the numbers every month.
There's pretty clear evidence that those could be a benefit for populations that are struggling. And you look at something and say, you know, how do we move that forward? And I think it helps to have in situations where we've tracked support for supervised injection sites over the course of a number of years. And we've really gotten to a point where while there certainly is a lot of, there can be a lot of controversy about which neighborhoods they go into. I think we're all familiar with those discussions and some of the protests and pushbacks of where these types of programs are going to be set. We're in a situation where 2/3 of Canadians are actually in favor of supervised injection sites.
65%. That's pretty amazing.
Getting down to that, you know, okay, you support them. Now, what about if it was a block down the street from you, that type of thing? Then you get into a situation where people become a little bit more standoffish. But I think it helps for policymakers to see that that's actually a strong majority position. And we're in a situation now where decriminalization has kind of had the same renaissance in public opinion, where, you know, you've got 66% of BC residents who say that we should decriminalize all illicit drugs.
Like all drugs.
Yeah, and 60% in Ontario, in Quebec, and in Nova Scotia. So we're at that 60% mark in four of the provinces. So there's it does allow policymakers to have a look at what the public are saying and actually bring those options to the table and get past that first step, which is, okay, will people actually support this, and get to the more pragmatic planning stages of, okay, now how do we execute this?
You can see the seesaw in your graphs. It's like with 60% in favor of decriminalizing, only 45% are in favor of getting tougher on people who use drugs. I mean, this is the rhetoric we hear people saying, oh, nobody wants harm reduction, or people don't want to decriminalize, the government's too scared to act because the people don't want it. Only 45% want a tough on crime, tough on drugs approach.
Even if you look at people who are older in Canada, who are more inclined to have that get tough on people sort of mindset, that a little bit more of an old school approach, it's 51% who say that we should get tougher on people who use drugs, but 54% who support decriminalization. So there's an element of attention there, even with those older residents, where they do see some value. When you look at younger people who've grown up with these discussions, I think being a little bit more present in their life and just being more informed about these issues from a younger age, 70% say they support decriminalization, and just 35% say we need to take a punitive action toward this issue. So I think we're moving in the direction where people are supporting the harm reduction approach. And you know, I think all of these studies that have been done over the years that have been, you know, impossible to get people to pay attention to for years and now are so valued, I think are important. And it's good to see this sort of data to put it in front of policymakers and say that, you know, the situation has changed. And unfortunately, some of that has been brought on by just how bad the issue has become. And people are looking for any sort of option. And if you have a program that has a perceived efficacy, it becomes more popular, just as it might have been controversial in 2000, but in 2021, we're looking at this and saying we have to do something. So I think there's an element of that as well.
This has always been a political problem in the sense that the political choices have not been made over the years that people feared might anger the voters or might go against party policy or values. Can you tell us a little bit about the political leanings? Because there's some pretty stark differences on these policy approaches, like what programs people would support based on who they vote for federally.
The federal level, you see conservatives, I think as people would kind of assume, are more inclined to pursue that, getting tough on people who are using drugs, really taking punitive measures. You got 63% who say they favor that, just 34% for supervised injection sites and 39% for decriminalization. You see a real flip, the reverse for Liberal and New Democratic supporters. The NDP supporters, 78% supporting decriminalization. It's 69% for Liberals and Green voters as well. We don't want to leave them out just because they're a smaller sample size. There are almost 300 of them in this study. So that's important group to highlight as well. 84% support for supervised injection sites. Just 22% for people for getting tough. So you really do see that. And then we actually do have some provincial level stuff for BC listeners, which I think is interesting, where New Democratic voters, John Horgan supporters from the last election, 81% support for supervised injection sites, 76% for decriminalization. So, you know, we do have a majority government right now, and supporters of that majority government are very strongly in favor of those two approaches.
That's three quarters of their supporters. I mean, if you talk about a base, it's amazing that they haven't acted on it, to be honest, when you see that number.
Yeah. And if you work in the average between, you know, New Democrats, Liberals, everybody in the province, you do get 2/3 support for both of those policy items. Obviously coming disproportionately from New Democratic Party supporters, but also from Green supporters and from a considerable portion of BC Liberals, for whom 47% say they support both of those items. So, It's one of those things where not everybody is going to be satisfied if that's the route that the government chooses, but 2/3 is a pretty comfortable majority to be putting forth something that could save lives.
We hear a lot, there's so little treatment beds available, there's so few programs, mental health support is almost completely lacking for your average person in the province. What did you find about people who tried to get help for an addiction or dependency to substances?
We found that one of the challenges with this is that, you know, only about 1 in 5 people who say that we asked them to talk about somebody they know in this situation, not about themselves, because we want to give people some anonymity and just create some sort of comfort in the survey taking process. So we asked just the people who say that they know somebody who's had a challenge and said, you know, how did they handle it? And only about 1 in 5, 17%, said that person who's either a close friend or family member was able to get help easily. 32% say that they sought help and had a difficult time finding it. And 31% say that they didn't actually seek help. They kind of took it on themselves. So you've got a significant portion, about 60% there, that either didn't really go outside for help, didn't feel comfortable doing that, or weren't able to find it. And if you look at some of the, you know, the costs for programs for people who are maybe trying to get into a rehabilitation program or get some sort of counseling, that can be really prohibitive. And I think we do see that in the such a small number of people saying that it was actually easy to get help, just 1 in 5. So I think that's something also to monitor and for governments to be looking at and saying, you know, that's a very low number of people who actually were comfortable seeking help and actually were able to find it, with this being such a widespread issue.
I know this issue affects you personally on a very deep level, as it does many of us and our listeners. What's your biggest hope for this latest round of data? What do you hope this might achieve, or what kind of change do you think this might help drive?
The hope from a lot of people is just more attention and action and leaning into the policy approaches that have been proven to be the most effective. We've been in a situation with, I would say, a lot of posturing over the course of the last couple of decades. It's been a very political issue trying to, you know, to get action on this. And while we are, you know, an unbiased and nonpartisan organization who's not going to suggest that anything be done specifically, I think that advocates are just looking for action on this and just saying, we've been talking around this issue for a number of years. We've been in a state of crisis for the better part of 5 years at least. I think people are just looking for action and looking for the solutions that have been studied and have been proven to work. And I think that's what we see mostly in this data, is that there's a little bit of exasperation with just inaction from political leaders, whether it's in BC or in the rest of the country. And it's an issue that people really care about. And when we look at the numbers that we have been seeing roll in as attention being paid to this has kind of dropped off the map, it's really, it can be really difficult for people to stomach. And I think it's very frustrating for people who either have been affected by this or have kind of spent their time advocating for solutions and trying to save lives. So I think it's just a situation where people want to see action. And for policymakers, they've got the tools. And I think it's there's a situation now where the public appetite for certain options, it really is there.
I know over the years I've interviewed successive ministers of health, Terry Lake, the former health minister under the BC Liberals, advocate of a lot of these policies, including safe supply and decriminalization, but told me that there was difficulties around getting the political mass or base. In a way, this new data kind of takes away some of that fear, or could at least.
Even if you dig a little bit deeper and you look at the community level in areas where acceptance of policies like supervised injection are so much higher, really leaning into those programs, I think, is something that you can do in certain places. It is still, you know, you're kind of pushing uphill in certain places. Certainly in the interior, there is some pushback that I'm familiar with living in this part of the province. But these issues have really become really more pronounced also in the interior, in places like Kelowna. Obviously, we've seen Penticton in the news recently with the homelessness issue going on there as well. So these are issues that are affecting all communities now. And I think that's why you see support for policies to address them moving in that direction. And I think that it's less of an issue of political or of public will now, but more one of political will.
Thank you so much for your time, Dave. It's really great to have us break down the data for us and share some of your thoughts.
Yeah, anytime. Thank you for having me.
And that was Dave Krasinski. He is the research director with the Angus Reid Institute. And you can find their survey at angusreid.org. The random online survey is considered to have a margin of error equivalent to 1.4%.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.